Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views. And tonight they're going to be the views of Dr. Michael Kaufman, who's good enough to be with us here. It's pretty late back in the East where he lives, but he's good enough to be with us. I wanted to start the program this evening by going back 45 years, and I was a young orthopedic surgeon in a seaside community, young, successful, and one evening, it was in July, as I remember, 1962, and I sat down in front of the television screen. I wanted to watch a program called The Naked City, which was very popular at that time, and instead of that, I tuned to the wrong station, and there was some old man talking, and he was talking about the fact that the media was controlled, that the general media was lying to the American people. He talked about the fact that America was not a democracy, and of course, I'd graduated from the University of California with a Phi Beta Kappa key and honors, and I thought I was pretty smart, and he said, no, he said, everybody believes America is a democracy, but it's really not, it's a republic, and of course, a democracy, of course, people can really do whatever they want to, whereas a republic is a government of laws, and we've been lied to by the media. And furthermore, he said that Fidel Castro had just been brought to power, and I remember at the time when he'd come to America after he'd assumed power and led this wonderful, successful revolution, and he'd spoken before Congress, and he'd hugged Richard Nixon, said he was going to go back to Cuba to fight communism, and then by 1962, everybody knew he was a communist, and I always had a little uneasy feeling about that, and what this old man on television said was that Fidel Castro had always been a communist. Our government had brought him to power knowing he was a communist, and had intentionally overthrown Batista and installed a communist regime just 90 miles off our Florida Keys. Well, that seemed pretty ridiculous, all those things, but I set out to prove them wrong, and of course I learned eventually that the media in America is controlled, that we are a republic, not a democracy, and you can read the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution of any one of our 50 states. You'll never find the word democracy used other than to decry it and say the last thing we want is a democracy. We want a republic. We want a government of laws, not a government that can control us and regulate us under the name of democracy. And then, of course, that gentleman was actually right. Fidel Castro has always been a communist. In fact, he's a very good friend of the daughter of the richest and most powerful man in America, David Rockefeller. And if you read David Rockefeller's memoirs, which we now carry, David Rockefeller will tell you how his daughter frequently goes down to visit with her good friend, Fidel Castro. Nothing as it appears to be. And it's that brings us to our subject for this evening, which is global warming. Literally every means of communication will tell you that global warming is a reality. Certainly Al Gore, the former presidential candidate, says every scientist agrees. The general consensus of all the reliable scientists is global warming is a reality and it's related to man's activity on the planet. Certainly this is what they're teaching in schools. This is what where they're teaching, even in some of our churches. Many of our churches have climbed on board this, but the trouble is it really isn't true. There is global warming, but there's been global warming many times, which is why Greenland is called Greenland, because 1,000 years ago, Greenland was green, and it was a wonderful, lush area, and then we went into a period of global cooling, and now we're once again in a period of global warming. But you see, most people don't understand that. They honestly believe if everybody is saying it must be true. And the trouble is if everybody's saying it, it's not true, because the media is controlled. Well, Dr. Kaufman, you've done a lot of work on this. Why don't you bring us up to date on global warming?
Why don't I do that, Stan? I thank you for being on the program again. For those of you who perhaps are just joining now and have not heard me on the Stan's program before, I have a PhD in ecosystems analysis, and back in the 1990s, I was actually working on the issue of global warming and its effects on our nation's ecosystems. Had the opportunity of actually rubbing shoulders with many of the scientists and so forth that were involved in the global warming issue, working with the EPA, the U.S. Forest Service, and many other federal research branches on this, I think, very important issue. At that time, I actually thought that there was a very good likelihood that man was causing global warming. But the more I got into it, Stan, the more I realized that it was all smoke and mirrors, and that the issue of global warming was probably not man-caused. It was probably part of a natural cycle. We didn't have the information then that we have now. And what I realized, this was part of a global agenda. This was really nothing more than an effort to convince all the people of the world that they had to turn over their lives, their futures, and so forth to a small group of people in order to save themselves. Because global warming is going to destroy the planet and them along with it if they didn't obey what these guys really wanted them to do. That's when I quit my job and began to try to tell the American people exactly what was going on.
Who were you actually working for at that time, Michael?
I was working for a timber company, believe it or not, actually a paper company, and leading the whole paper industry's research on global warming. We were spending well over $1 million a year on this particular issue. Because obviously, if we had global warming and our trees that are the raw materials for paper are going to be dying because of droughts and fires and other sundry things that were being forecast at that time and still are, then we needed to know about it and to start to develop a strategy to combat that particular effort. So the paper industry is putting a lot of money into finding out exactly what was happening and what they could potentially do about it. And I was leading that effort. But it was so obvious that even at that time, when we didn't have a whole lot of information, that it was a contrived catastrophe, that I really had to step back and quit my job and try to help the American people understand what was happening. Because this is very, very serious, folks. It's very serious. And as time has gone along, even though the clamor and the warning bells and so forth put out by the media are increasing dramatically over the years. Even up until this year, of course, Al Gore has got his new video out called...
Hold that thought. We'll be right back with Dr. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Dr. Michael Kaufman. Dr. Kaufman has his Ph.D. He has certainly worked with industry, worked in many capacities for many years, but back, you know, a decade or more ago, he was actually working for a timber company. They were researching global warming because they needed to know if this was real and what could be done about it, and certainly if global warming was a reality, it could influence the timber industry. And as Dr. Kaufman began working and evaluating it more and more, he realized this was a fraud. He realized, like so many other things, they've created an enemy. Communism, terrorism, well, here it's global warming, and what's the solution? We've got to give up our freedom. We've got to be regulated. We've got to regulate every aspect of human endeavor to combat this terrible enemy that threatens to destroy us, like communism or like terrorism, global warming. Of course, the oceans are going to rise, the forests are going to burn, there's going to be hurricanes, there's going to be storms, there's going to be droughts, and it's all related to global warming. The only trouble was that Dr. Kaufman began to realize, as a scientist, that this, of course, was a fraud. So you pick up the story there, and Michael, because you've done some tremendous work on it, and we really enjoy your DVD, which we do carry on global warming. We think it's very important. Go right ahead.
Well, one of the things that we're beginning to find out now is that former scientists that were supporting the man-caused belief that man was responsible for global warming are abandoning that theory by droves at this point. There have been several things come out this summer that just literally shatter the man-caused global warming hypothesis, and yet you see nothing in the media about this. And of course, as you were explaining a moment ago, there's a reason for that, Stan. It's because the media is controlled by these globalists, and they're not going to let anything come out that will actually ruin their efforts to use this scare story to force us to give up our rights and our freedoms and so forth. And global warming, the issue is carbon dioxide. And let me tell you, folks, carbon dioxide is the key to our economy at this particular point. Maybe one of these days we'll have cold fusion or something of that nature that will not emit carbon dioxide. But carbon dioxide is the key right now. If we want to have an economy, if we want to have transportation, if we want to have communication, I don't care what it is, it goes back to carbon dioxide, because carbon dioxide is always emitted in a fossil fuel combustion, which provides the energy that we need to drive our civilization. And it's a direct relationship. If we have to reduce our energy consumption, if we have to reduce our carbon dioxide emissions by 30%, as they're demanding that we do, then we have to reduce our energy consumption by 30%. Now, with new technology and so forth coming on, we can help ameliorate that, but it's still going to be a major, major impact on our economy. We're talking about trillions of dollars of lost opportunity, of impacts on our economy and so forth. It is a major type of thing. There's been several studies done on it. I'm not an economist, but there have been several studies done on it. And you're talking about trillions of dollars in just a few years that it's going to cost the global economy and the United States economy. And one of the things that it's going to allow us to do is to give these very few, you're talking about a couple, several hundred people, control of the United States economy, because they can say who can do what and when, because they can control the carbon dioxide emissions.
But I think what people have to understand is how much carbon dioxide there is in the atmosphere. It had gone from about 280 parts per million to 380 parts per million. That
correct.
Is 0.03% of the atmosphere is carbon dioxide. Most of the greenhouse gas is water. A little of it is methane, which is about 20 times as effective as a greenhouse gas than CO2. In fact, CO2 is a very, very, very small amount of a very, very ineffective greenhouse gas. We're talking about 0.03. We've gone from about 0.028 to 0.038, percent of the atmosphere carbon dioxide, and there's no way anybody with their right mind would believe that this is creating global warming. But it doesn't matter whether it's logical. The greenhouse gases are 1% of the atmosphere, and carbon dioxide is about 3% of the 1%. So people don't understand that this is a scam. But it doesn't matter how ridiculous something is. If you say it often enough, people will believe. Go ahead.
Right. When you really get down to it, different greenhouse gases, as you said, methane is 20 times more effective as a greenhouse gas, as is carbon dioxide. But carbon dioxide is more effective than water vapor, even though water vapor makes up 96% of the greenhouse gases in the atmosphere today. But even if you look at the potential greenhouse effect of carbon dioxide, it can't be any more than 27% of the total. It can't be any more. In fact, it's probably much less than that. It could be down as 5 or 6%. But even that is misleading, because, as you said, man-caused carbon dioxide is only a very small percentage of the total carbon dioxide that's emitted naturally in our atmosphere by trees, by others, and so forth, by animals, you name it, rotting bogs. Everything produces carbon dioxide as a gas and as in emissions.
No, but doesn't a great deal of the carbon dioxide actually come from the oceans? And
yes.
Isn't it?
I'll get into that in a moment, Stan.
Well, see, I've seen your DVD, so I know, but I think it's such
right.
an important issue. Go ahead.
Right. The point I want to make here is that less than 1%, more like 0.6%, as you were trying to get at a moment ago, Stan, 0.6% of all greenhouse gases are man-caused. Just a very tiny fraction. And this is supposed to be causing all this enormous changes in our heat. And the other thing that you need to remember is that there's about 40,000 times more carbon dioxide in the ocean, as you were getting at in a moment ago, Stan, than there is in the atmosphere. And interestingly enough, when the ocean warms up, it can't hold as much carbon dioxide, and it emits it out into the atmosphere. And if you've seen Inconvenient Truth by Al Gore, you'll see him walking in front of this gigantic screen showing the curves for carbon dioxide over the last 650,000 years and the temperature for the last 160,000 years. And indeed, there is a high correlation. When carbon dioxide goes up, temperature goes up. When carbon dioxide goes down, temperature goes down. And there is a very high correlation, but correlation doesn't prove anything. I can tell you right now that there's 100% correlation that every person out there that's listening to this is going to die because you breathe air. Now, is that true? No. But you do breathe air, and you will die. Therefore, there's 100% correlation. But it doesn't mean cause and effect. And just because you see a relationship between carbon dioxide and temperature doesn't mean there's a cause and effect. And when you see and actually superimpose, and one of these things, they're very clever, they'll separate the two graphs so you cannot really see the relationship that well other than in a broad scope. But if you actually superimpose those graphs, what you'll find is that temperature almost always precedes carbon dioxide. If the temperature goes up, carbon dioxide goes up. If the temperature goes down, carbon dioxide goes down anywhere from 200 to 800 years later.
Well, could you explain to our listeners why that is in the relationship, you know, of what heat does to drive the carbon dioxide out of the oceans? And then, of course, when it cools, why carbon dioxide goes back in the oceans. But once you heat up the ocean, then the carbon dioxide comes out and you see the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. But, of course, it's because of the global warming increases the carbon dioxide rather than the carbon dioxide increasing the global warming. And really what the chart shows is that first you have the warming and then you get the carbon dioxide. And that's what Al Gore doesn't tell you. Because Al Gore, of course, is part of a little clique that wants to control you. And, of course, once we acknowledge that, my goodness, we've got this terrible threat to America, global warming, we're going to have to give all power to people like Al Gore and the people that he was part of the group that put together this whole scam back in 1991. They met together on Prince Charles' ship, the yacht, the Britannia, and the global and financial elite were there, along with Prince Charles, and they hammered out this whole scam of sustainable development and global warming, and that then became the basis of the Second Earth Summit that was held in Rio de Janeiro in 1992. It came out with a plan for the Kyoto Protocol and the Desertification Treaty and the Biodiversity Treaty, which Dr. Kaufman played such a pivotal part in blocking. But all of this is aimed to give government total control over you, to protect us from that wicked enemy. I guess this enemy is going to be global warming. We always have to have an enemy, don't we?
We always have to have an enemy, and it's interesting that over this last summer, 2007, we have seen a number of things happen. For instance, Great Britain announced a few weeks ago that we are no longer having global warming. For the last 10 years, there is no statistical increase in Earth's temperature whatsoever. Now, you don't see that plastered all over your headlines. You don't see that in your evening news. However, Great Britain has officially acknowledged this, and a judge in their high court over there has just told the school systems in Great Britain that they cannot use Al Gore's Inconvenient Truth without explaining that it is politically motivated.
Boy, you can say that again. Of course, it's all about power. It's all about control over the lives of the people. But the average individual has no idea what's really going on. They honestly believe, of course, if they hear it on the radio and they see it on television and we see motion pictures about it and our politicians say it's true and some of our ministers say it's true and the university professors say it's true and government-funded scientists say it's true, it's got to be true. And the truth is, it's a lie. Because the vast majority of scientists, and Dr. Art Robinson actually did a survey, and over 17,000 qualified scientists wrote back and said there's no relationship between global warming and human activity. But, of course, that was totally suppressed by the controlled media, because they don't want you to know. Go right ahead, Michael.
One of the things that we, on the other side of this story that we often miss is the fact that carbon dioxide, while it is a very essential.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets, a little protects your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Teary. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
In the atmosphere, and then we had tremendous lush, much more lush growth than we do. But even since the CO2 has been increasing, why, suddenly they know that crop growth has actually increased somewhere between 11 and 20%. And the higher the CO2 goes, why, the better the plants will grow. But they don't want you to know that. They want to use this threat so that you'll be willing to give up your freedom, so that you'll be willing to cut back on your use of your cars, so you'll be willing to do away with the use of fossil fuels to create energy, so we can destroy the economy of the United States. Global warming is really an attack on the infrastructure of our country because it would require massive cutbacks in energy consumption. Now, it would not affect China or the other countries of the world. It's part of this whole idea of certainly limiting our industrial production, encouraging industrial production in other countries, redistribution of the wealth of the world, equitable distribution between nations, which means, of course, taking away the wealth from America, because we have so much, and transferring it to other nations. And one of the techniques that the elitists had hit upon was this scam of global warming, and if you can convince all the people it's true, why, they'll go right along. They will readily give in and allow them to destroy the infrastructure, the industrial infrastructure of our nation, where it's well on its way already. Go right ahead, Michael.
Well, one of the things that really is quite interesting in this whole Kyoto Protocol issue that you hear so much about in the media is that the United Nations itself acknowledges that it will do nothing to actually reduce global warming over the next 80 years or so. In fact, if it does anything at all, it might reduce the temperature by 0.015 or 17 degrees centigrade. I mean, it's almost non-existent, or it's not even going to get to that level. Why? Primarily because even though we reduce our greenhouse gas emissions by dramatic amounts and therefore by our economy, the third world nations don't have any binding on them at all. They can continue to produce as much as they want to. And ironically, China, just this year, has actually superseded the United States in the amount of carbon dioxide that it emits. And China's not even involved in the Kyoto Protocol. They don't have to do anything. They can continue to increase their emission levels as much as they want to. And what happens is, in order for us to protect our companies, our industry, and so forth, we have to buy emission credits from these third world nations, from China and from many other third world nations, like Mexico. And because we could buy emission credits that they're not using today in order to run our factories. Now,
it's all part of this scheme of wealth redistribution, but we can't tell the American people.
Wealth redistribution, that's what it is. It's a massive socialist income redistribution plan. That's all it really is. And you really get down to the bare bones.
And, you know, of course, we're never going to tell our school kids this. We're never going to tell them that the whole idea is to lower their living standards, to take away their opportunity for a good job when they eventually get out of school. And these poor kids being not educated in our schools, being indoctrinated in our schools, our schools, the purpose of our schools is not to reveal the truth, but to conceal the truth about what's going on. And it's exactly what's going on television, on radio, in motion pictures, and certainly in Al Gore's latest film presentation.
Absolutely. And, you know, the ironic thing about it is, you know, even though the Arctic ice sheet is diminishing, there's no question of that, it is. It's just come out in a major report today that reduction was not due to global warming, but to a change in the wind patterns that has broken up during the summer months, the Arctic ice sheet. Well, you know, that's great, because it allows greater shipping and so forth in areas that they couldn't ship before, and it has really, apparently, nothing to do with global warming whatsoever. Like I said, a lot of things has happened this summer that is really dispelling this whole man-caused global warming theology. You mentioned earlier about the fact that Greenland was once green. Well, it's always had an ice cap, but along the shorelines and so forth that now have ice, at one time the Vikings had settled back in the 1200 to 1300 A.D. And then we started to go, it got colder, and they finally had to abandon Greenland as a colony. But they were actually growing crops there for several hundred years, from about 800 A.D. to about 1200 or 1300 A.D. They were actually growing crops where there's now ice. And so we actually have the ability to go back to that situation, and that's where you're seeing most of the ice melt today, is along the edges of Greenland. Not in the center of the continent, but in along the edges. The same thing in Antarctica.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Chris, how often have you heard, the glaciers are melting, the glaciers are melting, what happened to the snows of Kilimanjaro? And of course, the snows of Kilimanjaro are melting. But if, when you talk about glaciers, many times some glaciers are actually growing in size. Others are melting and decreasing in size. But have you ever noticed they never show you the glaciers that are growing in size, only those that are melting? Why? Because they're creating your reality. And of course, CBS sent a film crew down to Antarctica, and they must have spent, $50,000 to $100,000 in that trip into Antarctica. Not cheap to get there with a whole crew with film people and I think it was Scott Pell who went down there. But they're showing you this one area where the ice is receding and it's falling into the ocean, but they never show you the other areas there of Antarctica where actually there's more ice being formed all the time. So what they do is they very, very selectively show you specific areas. Why? To control your reality. And you see those pictures where the glaciers had been, and now they're not there anymore, but they never show you the areas where the glaciers, new glaciers are forming. And you ask yourself, why? Why, very simply, they want to control what the American people think. Go right ahead, Michael.
And it is very interesting that the actual recession of ice in Antarctica is only occurring in two different places, relatively small places when you look at the size of the continent itself. And everywhere else in Antarctica, it's getting colder, and you're getting more ice accumulation. You never hear that, just like you said, Stan. You never hear that in the media. In fact, this year, they have a record amount of ice extent. Now, what does that mean? That basically means the amount of ice that has formed over the entire continent and out into the waters. They have a tie from the greatest amount of ice extent has occurred this year. So what you're saying is, we have as much ice as we had 100 years ago in Antarctica, and yet you never hear that in the major media. You never hear that. What you also never hear is that the polar bears themselves, except for one population, I think there's 16 different populations along the North American continent. These major populations are at record highs. They're 25% greater than they've ever been before, and yet the ice is receding. They can get along just fine without that ice. They don't need that ice, even though their major diet is on seals. They're obviously able to get those in another way. In fact, what you can almost make the statement, and I'm not a biologist.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here with Dr. Kaufman. Well, certainly this is Dr. Stan, and Michael Kaufman is simply pointing out that contrary to what you're hearing, the polar bear population is actually increasing, also in Antarctica. There is more ice there now than there was a few years ago because, of course, it's getting colder down in Antarctica and there's more ice being formed. And of course, this comes from solid evidence. In fact, if you want to check out some of what we're saying, there's a wonderful publication called Access to Energy, put out by Dr. Arthur Robinson, read by scientists all throughout the world based upon scientific studies that will show you that actually if you measure the glaciers of the world, they're actually not receding at all. In fact, many of them are actually increasing in size. And the fact that you're not hearing that today simply reflects what the degree of control that today exists over what the American people think. That's Dr. Art Robinson's publication, Access to Energy. You can get it off the Internet. Now, before we go on, I want Dr. Kaufman to get out his webpage and how you can get in touch with him, because Dr. Kaufman has some wonderful, wonderful information. Go right ahead, Michael.
Our website is discerningtoday.org. That's discerningtoday.org. And our 800 number, our toll-free number is 877-271-7639. That's 877-271-7639. Discerningtoday.org or 877-271-7639.
All right, fine. And if Dr. Kaufman's information is valid, we recommend it to you. We've known Dr. Kaufman for many years, and he certainly is one of the leaders in trying to educate the American people so they realize, of course, that they are being scammed by the controlled media, and the media is controlled. But then, you know, if they didn't control the media, the people would learn the truth. And they'd learn there's a little group of people who want to control you, who have a different vision of what the world should be. They don't believe in individual freedom or national sovereignty. They believe in rule by an elite. And this is the way it's always been. And, of course, our Constitution prevented them from controlling us, but step by step, we've converted from a republic to a democracy. And once you have a democracy, you have rule by legislators, and we have in Washington, D.C. today, some of the finest legislators that money could buy. And that's the difficulty with a democracy. You buy up the legislators, then they do the bidding of the elite, and the people lose their freedom, which is exactly what is happening in America today.
You know, I have a quote from James Madison, Stan, that I think is probably worth citing right now. It's in the Federalist Papers in Chapter 10. And he says, a pure democracy can admit of no cure for the mischiefs of the majority, and there is nothing to check the inducements to sacrifice the weaker party. Hence it is that such democracies have ever been such spectacles of turbulence and contention, have ever been found incompatible with personal securities or the right of property, and have been in general as short in their lives as they have been in violent in their deaths. In other words, he's condemning democracy as one of the worst forms of government that you can have. I mean, it's even worse in some ways than totalitarianism, because it always leads to totalitarianism, because you have might makes right mentality, and eventually somebody's going to get that power and it's going to destroy it for everybody else.
And that is absolutely true. Democracy will soon degenerate into an anarchy, such an anarchy that every man will do that what is right in his own eyes, and no man's life or property or reputation or liberty will be secure. And I said these are the things our founding fathers knew. Those of you who haven't seen our pamphlet on We Are a Republic, you need to get it. And actually that quotation from James Madison from the 10th of the Federalist Papers is there. And what's so interesting is that is never taught in our schools, because they don't want the American people, our children, will grow up to be citizens, to realize that we are a republic and not a democracy. Let me again suggest, if you'd like more information, why we have a wonderful little booklet. It's called We Are a Republic. You need to know it. You need to be able to discuss this intelligently so that people understand that our freedom, the very essence, of our personal sovereignty and our national sovereignty, is being progressively eroded by Al Gore and the people he represents, the ruling elite, who think that they should be ruling over us, and are moving us away from freedom towards a feudal state where you and I will become the serfs. Well, Sydney, this wonderful DVD you put out, which we do carry, has this been moving pretty well across the country?
Yes, it has. You know, it's very interesting that we're getting as many orders from Australia and New Zealand and Canada as we are from the United States, some in Great Britain as well, but a lot of orders out of New Zealand and especially Australia, because it's a major issue. I guess they're going to be taking a vote on something on this here shortly. And we've had as many sales down there as we've had here in the United States, and it's going like lightning here in the United States as people begin to realize how powerful this DVD is. And I want to just share with you some of the comments that we've gotten back from people who have bought this DVD. They not only have used it themselves to get the facts and exactly what is exactly going on in a correct context, but then they start to show it to their friends and neighbors and family and so forth that believe that man is causing global warming. And what I'm hearing back, and there may be exceptions to this, and I'm not hearing about those, understand that, but I'm getting a lot of calls back from these people basically saying, when they show it to their friends who believe a man is causing global warming, all of a sudden they realize they are being lied to. And when they begin to see why they're being lied to with this global governance, they get very angry. And that's exactly why we did it, is we want to show people what the truth is in this issue, and then lead them into why they're being lied to, because they want to create global governance. And once you understand the truth, it's very easy to see this.
And I really think it's so important because the common denominator behind everything, behind the desire for the North American Union, the reason that they're taking us into wars. Remember, why did we go to the First World War? Why, to make the world safer, democracy, and the war to end all wars. What it was about? Creating a world government of the United Nations. And when that failed, then we had to have a Second World War. And when that didn't work, and the United Nations didn't work, now we've got to have a Third World War. But they all get back to the same thing, and that's what this whole boogeyman of global warming is about. Oh, we're going to have to give up our freedom, and we're going to have to, since global warming is a worldwide affair, we're going to have global governance, which is simply a clever name for one world government under a new world leader and with a new world religion. And, of course, the amazing thing is that people really have believed, and an awful lot of good people are swept up in this because they've never been allowed to hear the other side. They don't even understand that only 1% of the atmosphere is greenhouse gases, and 96% of that greenhouse gas is water.
Yeah. It's just water vapor. There's no way we can control that. Now, the question comes up, Stan, well, if it's not carbon dioxide that's causing the increase in temperatures, what is it? Well, we look at it every day, or at least when it's not cloudy, it's the sun. So one of the things that I want to caution you on is that it's been shown very conclusively that the amount of energy changes in the sun cannot be directly responsible for the warming or the cooling of the Earth. In other words, the sun does change in its energy output, and the more energy it outputs, the warmer it gets on planet Earth. However, that's not a direct relationship because it doesn't increase the amount of energy necessary to cause that kind of warming here on planet Earth. It does it indirectly. Don't get caught in that trap and say that the sun's energy increases and that what causes because they'll laugh at you, and they're correct in their laughter. What it seems to be, and this has not been locked down solidly yet, but there's been more and more evidence shown very clearly that there is a relationship between what is known as the solar storms, or the solar winds that strike the Earth, cause the magnetic aurora borealis and all the rest, and in the opposing side, the cosmic radiation from exploding novae and so forth, exploding stars light years away, when they combat, there's this constant tug-of-war. The more cosmic radiation that gets to the Earth's surface, the more lower clouds are formed. And when you have low clouds, the sun reflects off the top of those clouds and never reaches the Earth's surface. Hence, it gets cooler. When there's more solar winds, all of a sudden it pushes that cosmic radiation back out into space, away from the heliosphere of the sun, and you have more... You have less cosmic radiation, and therefore you have less low clouds form, less solar reflection, and more solar energy reaching the Earth's surface and causes warming. And they have shown it's very high correlation, almost a 99% correlation between the amount of cosmic radiation reaching the Earth's surface and the amount of clouds at the Earth at any particular given time. Now, when it shifts back and forth, it's only a matter of a few percentage points of clouds. But that's all that's needed in order to shift the balance from cooling to warming or vice versa. And it's an amazing thing. It explains almost everything, especially in recent years. They're noticing that Mars and Jupiter, the moons of Jupiter and so forth, are also warming. Now, if those planets are also warming, it's certainly not due to the internal combustion engine on planet Earth.
And I love that line, and I like to say when we get into the discussion, I said, well, you know, the polar ice caps really are melting at both North Pole and South Pole on Mars. Now, why are they melting on Mars? Do you honestly believe it's, the Martians driving around in their cars and increasing the CO2? Or, is it the CO2 getting up there somehow from the Earth? Or is it simply this is a reflection of the solar activity and how the solar activity can alter, of course, all of the planets in the solar system? And that certainly puts the people on the other side at least into somewhat a defensive position. Immediately they want to discuss change the discussion or change the subject.
Yes, they do. In fact, they've made every kind of effort to try to discredit this theory. And one just came out this summer in July, an effort by a team of scientists to show that the sun could not be causing the warming in the last 30 years. And they trotted all kinds of evidence out and so forth to show this. And immediately, the scientists that are working on the solar connection were able to totally dispel what they were saying. In other words, they were using erroneous mathematics to arrive at it. They were using a bad set of data in order to arrive at their conclusions and so forth, and literally made a mockery out of them. The fact is that there is every evidence that the sun is responsible. Now, maybe they don't have it nailed down exactly how it happens, but it has something to do with the solar winds versus the cosmic radiation. We just don't know exactly what it is yet, but nonetheless, that relationship seems to be very, very strong, and it accounts for all of the warming that we've seen in the last 100 years.
And really, I think that it's so vastly important that people get the information and then begin to study it and begin to assimilate it and then begin to understand that what motivates the people on the other side, it is a desire to control you. And just as we had to have a communist enemy and we had to give up our freedom to protect us from communism, as we have to have a terrorist enemy, we have to have an Osama bin Laden over there because now that justifies ever more government control over our lives to protect us from the wicked Osama bin Laden who wants to take away our freedom. So we have the enemy of global warming, and we've got to be protected from that, and that's why we're going to have to, of course, just do away with so much of our industrial production and cut back on our consumption of carbon, certainly of hydrocarbons, and cut back on our driving and get the price of gasoline up to $10-$15 a gallon so that people won't be using so much of it. And people say, we can never have gasoline at $10 a gallon. I'd say, why not? They're able to do just about whatever they want to, and right now it's up to almost $3 a gallon, and over in Europe it's $6 a gallon, and I wouldn't be surprised if one day we'd find gasoline $10 a gallon, but of course we would justify that because it would be a means of combating global warming. And we know it's true because Al Gore says that there certainly are no responsible scientists who disagree with this. There is a consensus among scientists. How do you answer that statement by Al Gore? There's a consensus among responsible scientists.
It just does not exist. Period. I can say the end of the discussion right there, but I'll give you some information. In 2003, a survey was done amongst all 500 and some odd climatologists in the world. There aren't that many of them. And they found that only 56% even had an inkling that man was responsible for global warming. The rest of them had real serious questions of whether man was causing global warming. And when they actually got to the point where we have enough information to form policy, in other words, the Kyoto Protocol or something like that, the number of scientists that supported that premise dropped to 46%. Now, this was in 2006 or 2003. That's a long ways from consensus right there. I mean, the consensus has never existed. Just like you were saying, 17,000 scientists have signed Art Robinson's petition saying that we don't know enough to be able to do any of this yet to say anything one way or the other. On the other side, in the last year, there was about 500 articles published in Global Warming. Now, listen to this. Of that 500 papers or so, I think it was 550 or something like that, what they found was that less than 50% of those papers even hinted at man was causing global warming. In other words, there are fewer and fewer scientists that are believing this man-caused global warming because they're no longer even putting it in their papers. And that same amount, basically, we're saying that man probably is not responsible for global warming. So we're seeing a huge switch within the scientific community over the last several years away from man-caused global warming to something either they don't know or it's a natural cycle.
And, of course, the thing is that Al Gore simply lies. But then what would you expect from Al Gore? I mean, after all, his whole family has been tied into, you know, Mr. Armand Hammer, who was a communist. This is where his father, Senator Gore's father, and Senator Gore himself got their backing from Armand Hammer. Lifelong communist, and they were sort of fronts for Armand Hammer here in the United States. They're not honorable people. They've never been honorable people. And they're lying about this. But all of this, of course, is an elitist means by which they can gain control of you. Oh, my goodness, we've got to do something about the threat. If we don't do something about the threat, why, the sea levels will rise. So our seaside communities will be destroyed. The polar bears will all die off. Our whole form and framework of life will change as we have more intense heat, and, of course, as our crops dry, as our forests burn. It's all the threat of global warming. We're just going to have to give up our freedom to protect us from the boogeyman of global warming. We'll be right back with Dr. Kaufman here in just a moment. Well, Michael, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, one of the things that I kind of want to leave the listeners with tonight is the fact that we are in a period of absolute lying of, and you know who the father of lies is. Is Satan himself. And there is a major spiritual battle going on. We're seeing the evidence of this and all this lying and so forth about global warming. And one of the things that, even though I do not mention any spiritual aspects or something in this DVD, but one of the things I really wanted to do was to get it in the hands of people who believe that man is causing global warming based on what they've heard in the media. And by doing that, they realize they have been lied to. If they've been lied to on this issue, they could be lied to on all these other issues as well. And it's all got to do with the formation of global governance. That's the whole reason right there in a nutshell. But realize, as a Christian, as most of you are in the listening audience, your first and foremost responsibility is in the spiritual dimension, because we need to be praying that the truth would be revealed, that people who maybe are being deceived right now but want to know the truth and learn the truth, because we're going into some very difficult times, and it's going to be very hard to discern what the truth is. And here we have an opportunity to do so, and not only to show how this lie is being perpetrated, but to actually be praying that God would be successful in doing whatever He is wants to do in this particular issue. It's amazing. Just three of us stopped the Convention on Biological Diversity from being ratified. You never know how God is going to use you. And as a consequence, you need to be educated, but you need to be on your knees as well.
Beautifully said, because, of course, this is really what it's all about. It is part of this overall spiritual battle in which we're involved in. And, you know, I wish more people recognized what you recognize, Michael, and that is that, really, of course, this whole global warming scam is simply another manifestation of this attack on Christianity, an attack on Western civilization. And behind that is the father of lies. Well, our guest this evening has been Dr. Michael Kaufman. His DVD is Global Warming. And it is available through Radio Liberty. We think it is certainly the best single thing that is available, educational tool that we have right now, by which we're going to be able to reach people with an understanding of the fact that they've been lied to. And I think Michael's point is so good and so well taken. If we can convince them they've been lied to about global warming, then maybe they'll realize that everything else they see in the media, that they read in the media, that they see on television, that they see in motion pictures, that they hear on talk radio, is all a lie as well. Good night. God bless. Thanks so much. Well, I guess it's been Dr. Michael Kaufman. Michael? Well, I guess Michael's gone, but he's certainly a good friend, and Dr. Kaufman is simply pointing out, while we were off the air, the importance of this from a spiritual point of view, that there are powerful spiritual forces working behind the scenes, moving us towards this world government, that this whole thing, of course, of global warming is a lie, and who is the father of lies? It's Satan himself, and course, Dr. Kaufman urges all of the people who are involved in this to be on their knees and be praying. And you may not be a Christian, but we hope that many of you will understand that there is a spiritual component to everything that is going on today. Well, we carry Dr. Kaufman's DVD, The Global Warming. We carry, of course, a book called Unstoppable Global Warming, and another book called The Politically Incorrect Guide to Global Warming. That's the DVD, Global Warming, the book, The Unstoppable Global Warming, going into, of course, the cycles that have been down through the centuries, heating and cooling and heating and cooling, and then The Politically Incorrect Guide to Global Warming. We have a four-tape set on global warming. And this is all part of the program on sustainable development. We have an excellent syllabus on that that contains the Earth Charter and the World Bank Water Policy and the summary of the Global Biodiversity Assessment and of course, my treatise on population control and the Georgia Guidestones and, of course, the major architects of this would be, of course, Marie Strong. Who is Marie Strong? And who is Barbara Marx Hubbard? And who are these people who, of course, are working behind the scenes, manipulating our reality? The Sustainable Development Syllabus, the Sustainable Development Video, that's called Sustainable Development, the Road to World Government, and the four-tape set on sustainable development. All of these are important. If you really want to see how it all fits together, and, of course, global warming is simply part of the attack on Western civilization. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. An excellent book on the control of the media is Ben Beck-Dakin's The New Media Monopoly. Unfortunately, we don't carry it anymore, but you can get that off of Amazon. The New Media Monopoly. Then, of course, we want you to seriously consider coming to our all-day seminar. It's going to be on October 28th, and it's going to be the Aptos Seascape Golf Course. It's going to be on a Sunday this year, because we got such a great turnout last year. Many people were unable to get here on Saturday, so I think that you'll find it's fascinating. We'll start early in the morning. We'll go serve lunch. We'll go straight through until 5 or 5:30 in the evening. Plenty of time for asking questions. Plenty of time to get the information you need to know and to meet people from all across the world, who, or at least all across the country, who feel as you and I do. So that's the 28th of October, and you're going to need a reservation. So if you're interested in coming, our number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And let me commend you once again, Dr. Kaufman's excellent DVD, Global Warming, our four-tape set on global warming, certainly the books Unstoppable Global Warming and The Politically Incorrect Guide to Global Warming. All of this information is available through Radio Liberty. We want you to understand it's a scam. And once you understand it's a scam, then, of course, you can begin to express this to other people. If you'd like to get a copy of this evening's program, why, of course, it is available from Radio Liberty. And remember, we're talking about an increase of 280 parts per million to 380 parts per million in CO2. That is 0.038% of the atmosphere. Greenhouse gases are only 1% of the atmosphere and 96% of greenhouse gases. It just happens to be vapor. And, of course, 3% happens to be CO2. Then the rest is methane, which is a much more efficient greenhouse gas than CO2 would ever be. Understand it's a scam. You're being lied to. And then, of course, pray for America. Pray for revival, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and for this next hour, the views of Dr. Arthur Burnclough, I should just say Arthur Burnclough of Veterans for Constitutional Law. And Arthur is a veteran himself, and he and a small group of people who work with him are dedicated to be sure that the veterans who are returning from this war and the last war and previous wars are receiving the guarantees of treatment that they've been promised. But unfortunately, that is not the way the Veterans Administration works. You see, right now, of course, our government's having a lot of trouble financially. They made all the promises to the veterans. And, of course, they can't give all the perks to the politicians and to the bureaucrats if they take care of the veterans, and so they do everything they can to come up with new and ingenious ways of depriving the veterans of the benefits that they've been guaranteed by our elected representatives. The purpose of the Veterans Administration is not to provide benefits for truly deserving veterans. It is a vehicle of depriving deserving veterans of their benefits. And with that as the background, Arthur Burnclough, thank you for everything you do, and thank you for being with us this evening.
Thank you very much, Dr. Stan, for having me here once again, and it's been quite a busy couple of weeks here. I don't know if you heard the news that the Veterans Disability Benefits Commission has completed its study after 2 years. And this was the same commission that Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi's office asked me to be on the commission, and I turned it down. I said, I can't work with those 13 people. I said, if you fire them and let me do the work myself, I'll be glad to sit down with you on here and come to some good conclusions. And I passed on that, and they completed their study this week, and the surprising part is, they found on this study that the veterans' disability, they are calling for the president and for Congress to call for a 25% hike in disability pay. In 62 years, there has not been a raise in VA disability pay. Aside from the cost of living that they have, the cost of living increases. They have not had an actual raise in disability rates in 62 years. And the Presidential Commission calls for an immediate 25% increase in veterans' disability compensation while awaiting a larger overhaul of disability and transition benefits. The Veterans Disability Benefits Commission will say the current compensation system is outdated, and it fails to consider the complete impact that a service-connected disability has on the life of veterans and their families. And the report is available online. If anyone's copying this down, it's on http://www.vetscommission.org.
Well, of course, that sounds like that they weren't totally prejudiced against the veterans. And in other words, they really, what other things did they come up with besides suggesting that they would get a raise in the disability, considering they hadn't had a raise in some 25 or 60 years?
Well, they were, they picked like 13 reactionaries for that commission. There were 9 Republicans and 4 Democrats, and the 4 Democrats are even worse than the 9 Republicans. And yet it was so bad that even they had to say, this whole thing has to be overhauled.
All right, fine. You hold that thought. Our guest this evening is Arthur Burnclough, and we're talking about the Veterans Administration and the mistreatment and maltreatment of the men who fought for America. Go ahead, Arthur.
Now, this coming Wednesday, they're releasing a 562-page report. Why they haven't released this yet is beyond me, but Wednesday they're coming out officially with the 562-page report. And most of the recommendations, including the proposed 25% benefits boost, would require congressional action before it could take effect. And with the Bush administration already balking at the $4 million increase in veterans' health care and benefits programs being pushed by Congress, it's unlikely that administration officials would support further increases. And this is Bush's own commission. He's the one who picked these people, pretty much. Now, however, an overhaul, he didn't pick me, but one of the Congress people from your area asked me to be on the commission, and I declined. However, an overhaul of the Veterans Disability Rating System, streamlined claims processing, and an easier transition from military to veterans programs are all issues that are under consideration by Congress, and it could end up included in the Wounded Warrior Assistance Act that lawmakers expect to pass later this year. An overhaul of the military's complicated disability retirement and physical evaluation process is expected to be part of that bill, and the report by the 13-member commission, led by retired Army General James Scott, caps more than 2 years of work, including several precedent-setting studies of disabled veterans and their compensation that looked at their total income and compared military and veterans benefits to those received by disabled workers who never had served in the military. In calling for an overhaul of the military and Department of Veterans Affairs rating system, the commission said a revised system needs to be fair so that people who have experienced similar losses receive similar compensation, and veterans with mental disorders, including PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, are particularly poorly served by the current rating system. The VA rating schedule that sets the disability levels have not been changed in 62 years, believe it or not, and needs to be updated. The commission said with top priority going to revising the ratings for PTSD, traumatic brain injury, and other mental health and neurological body systems. This could be done quickly in time to help Iraq and Afghanistan war veterans while leaving a review of the rest of the ratings to roll out over 5 years. The commission comes down squarely on the side of veterans, which was a surprise to everybody, on several controversial issues. For example, it supports allowing disabled retirees to receive full veterans disability compensation and military retirement.
Hold that thought right there for just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Arthur is simply telling us a little bit about this report that is going to be coming out here in another week or so, over 500-page report after this two-year study. What people don't understand is that you may be a veteran, you've actually been receiving veterans' benefits, and then, of course, if you get to the point where you're going to get Social Security, they simply deduct that from your veterans' benefits, so you can't get your veterans' benefits and Social Security as well. So they will figure out every way they can of shortchanging veterans. So many of our veterans coming back now have brain injuries. I mean, this is the most common injury, even more common than losing an arm or a leg, is the brain injury that comes from the IED, the improvised explosive devices that are blowing up, of course, our Humvees and the other vehicles over there. There really are ways to avoid this. There are vehicles put out by force protection where nobody has ever died in one of those vehicles. But they just, of course, can't seem to get them manufactured. I can remember when, during the Second World War, they were able to build a ship from the beginning to the end in one day. But all shucks, we just can't get around to being able to build up these armored personnel carriers for our soldiers over there. They're just, we just don't know how to do it. They can do it for every other army in the world, but we can't do it for ours. We give them inferior rifles. I mean, our rifles are nowhere near as good as the Russian rifles, the AK-47. No, we give our people very often inadequate armor. We give them inadequate equipment. And then we wonder, of course, why so many of them come back with severe disabilities, and especially so many brain disabilities. This is a very real problem, and these are irreversible brain changes that will be with them the rest of their lives. And these young men who went overseas to fight for freedom, and of course they're finally coming back, not only deprived of the care, but losing their freedom here at home. Go right ahead, Arthur.
Well, the amazing part of it, the commission comes down squarely on the side of veterans. Even this reactionary commission couldn't help it. Of course, you know, the lawsuit with 800,000 veterans being part of it, that supports this whole thing, too. You've got this hanging over their head, and they know that now that veterans are allowed attorneys, things are going to start to change. And they're not going to change easy. They're going to change hard, because some of these hardliners are going to die hard. So it's gonna be changes. It supports allowing disabled retirees to receive their full veterans disability compensation and military retire pay when they're eligible for both, and to allow survivors to receive their full veterans and military survivors benefits. On both of these issues, the Pentagon has resisted efforts in Congress to allow both payments in full, although in recent years lawmakers have been phasing out the mandatory offsets in one pay or the other that have been on the books for decades. And one recommendation that may not please veterans calls for periodic reviews in cases which disability pay is based in part on the fact that a veteran's disability prohibits him or her from holding a job. Now, we call that headhunting. When former Secretary of the VA Nicholson made a similar recommendation a few years ago, the veterans went wild about the government trying to cut their payments. The commission calls for periodical and comprehensive evaluation of veterans' disability employability status and a way to slowly wean veterans off benefits if it's possible for them to return to work at some point. Now, if it's possible for them to return to work at some point, that's a different story. But when I say headhunting, I mean certain people in the VA who make these decisions and get paid benefits to push people out of disabilities and say, hey, you can work at a job somewhere and you don't have to be on disability. And they push them into any kind of a menial job, not the job they were trained for or anything, but a menial type of job. And it's with what's going on now with this lawsuit, it's picking up momentum, and more people are joining this lawsuit every day. And the biggest shock was there has not been a disability raise in 62 years. That's the most amazing thing about this whole thing. And I've gotten about 7 or 8 different reports and some different views on here. And Mr. Bush, the disability plan comes a little late in the game from Mr. Bush. Now, this is by the Army Times, Rick Mays, who's the staff writer there. And he writes, Mr. Mays writes, the Bush administration officials appear to be trying to stall the already slow-moving train of reform of military and veterans' disability benefits by appealing to the lawmakers to give the Veterans Affairs Department permission to revise disability ratings. In briefings for lawmakers and their staffs, administration officials have floated a three-part overhaul of the disability benefit system that includes paying a temporary disability allowance to newly separated service members while they adjust to their changed life circumstances, and an easier transition between the military and veterans' health care systems for severely injured service members, which is not bad. Getting the most attention, however, is a request for Congress to allow the VA more time for a complete overhaul and update of the disability claim system. Now, when they say a complete overhaul, I don't mean they should give these people 15, 20 years to overhaul it. They would love that, to take their time and do it as slow as they want, but with a lawsuit hanging over their heads, they can't take too much time, because this is going to be, if this is not decided by Congress and the administration, this is going to be decided by the law.
Now, because we still keep referring to the fact that a lawsuit is hanging over them, you're referring to the fact that now, for the first time in ever, What people, veterans, are going to be able to have a lawyer actually help them when they apply for Veterans Administration benefits. Up until now, they've been blocked from having that. Is that
true? Sure, they've been blocked totally. They've been pushed over to the American Legion, to the Disabled American Veterans, to the VFW, to all of these chartered service organizations who are not on the side of the veteran. They're on the side of the VA. They work together with the VA to downgrade a veteran's claim. And I think those days are going to be over with very shortly. I think myself and other people have worked pretty hard to make changes here, and these changes are being made. And the White House doesn't like the changes that are being made. The VA and the people who are paying each other benefits, they don't like the changes that are being made. And the ominous threat of putting some of these people in jail, for sure they don't like those changes, but by God, it's going to happen.
Well, look, for our listeners out there, I think that they have to understand that, you know, for as long as we can remember, if a veteran, of course, wanted to apply for a disability claim, he would have to, of course, go into the Veterans Administration system, but he was not allowed to have legal counsel. I mean,
right.
The Veterans Administration had thousands of lawyers aligned against this one little guy here who has no right to legal counsel, and it will take him years to get through all the hearings, and they said they would repeatedly be turned down, and there was something, well, a very, very small, if you appealed your rating, I think they had something like 4% ever won, and the rest of them, I said they were into this system, hearing after hearing after hearing, year after year after year, and it was all delays, and they were actually giving benefit and bonuses to the VA employees who could deprive the veterans of the maximum amount of their benefits. In other words, if you could keep people from getting their benefits, then you got a large bonus from the American government. Well, then, of course, eventually a law was passed that would allow the veteran to have an attorney. He'd have to pay for it. But at least he would have an attorney to help him, you know, it through the system. And so certainly this is going to change the entire complexion, and it's going to stop the VA from blocking the veteran from getting benefits, because that was really what it's all about. Isn't it right, Arthur?
Yep, exactly. And I've been going back and forth the last few weeks between Washington and New York, and there's an awful lot happening right now. And we're getting some incredible cooperation from the McClatchy newspapers. These are the people who took over Knight Ridder, and we're getting some incredible cooperation from these people. Thank God there are still people in the media like them. And there was some studies done here. 16 years after the Persian Gulf War ended, that's the Gulf War I, more than one in four of those who fought in that war, they remain seriously ill with medical problems ranging from severe fatigue and joint pain to Lou Gehrig's disease, multiple sclerosis, and brain cancer. And the chairman of a congressional advisory committee testified this last Tuesday on this.
That's over 25% of them. Either.
Yes.
We call it Gulf War illness. Call it what you will. Government denies it's Gulf War illness. Of course it's Gulf War illness. They
sure
ought to cover it up. They had to lie about the Agent Orange. They had to lie about MTBE and our gasoline. And they're lying about the Gulf War illness. That's what government officials do. They lie. If you want to keep your job, you lie. And I've talked to people who work for the Veterans Administration who wanted to treat the people with Gulf War illness, and they got fired because they wanted to help the veterans. Go right ahead.
Well, you're going to have a guest on your conference, Drs. Garth and Nancy Nicholson,
right,
who will go into this in detail, and this man knows more about this illness in Gulf War I than anyone I've ever talked to. But, you know, even as more is learned about what's now called the Gulf War veterans' illness, the Defense Department and the VA remain in virtual denial about its causes.
And you have one in four, over one in four, is ill today. And I think it's a lot more than 25%. So they'll admit to 25%. And they will not tell you how many of them have died. We have the figures from Veterans Administration. They're truly unbelievable. And if you'd like those figures, we have them. We'll be glad to send them to you. We got them off the Veterans Administration website. And at least according to the Veterans Administration, over 10% of those healthy young men are dead today. Arthur, go right ahead.
Well, James Benn for the Defense Department is the head of the Research Advisory Committee on this disease, and it's a tragic record of failure, and the time lost can never be regained. Benn's told the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee, the government manipulation of science and violation of law to devalue the health problems of ill veterans is something I wouldn't have believed possible in this country until I took this job. And this is a government man who is saying this. The Pentagon and VA officials defended their approach to studying and treating the illness, saying they're taking it seriously, funding clinical and other research, and are committed to ensuring that Gulf War veterans receive needed care. And veterans who report health problems are definitely ill, said Michael Kilpatrick, the Defense Department's Deputy Director for Force Health Protection and Readiness Programs. However, they do not have a single type of health problem. Consequently, these veterans have to be evaluated and treated as individuals. Although the focus was on the earlier Gulf War, concerns hovered over the hearing that those now fighting in Iraq might face similar medical problems and the added problem of depleted uranium. Now, 15% to 20% of those who fought in Iraq are returning. Of those who fought in Iraq recently are returning with ill-defined medical systems.
What's the percentage of that, Arthur? How many?
15 to 20% that fought in Iraq recently, they're returning with ill-defined medical systems. They're meaning radiation. And he didn't elaborate. Among those testifying was Lady Julie Muck, a 40-year-old mother of two from Seattle who served along the Iraq-Kuwait border with a medical unit. In early 1991, the alarms of chemical detectors went off repeatedly, she said. We ingested expired pyrostigmine bromide tablets. We wore gas masks with expired filters, inhaled dust and sand in the air that was thick with the black of burning oil. She said, I experienced respiratory difficulties. My skin grew hot with red rashes. I began to suffer from debilitating headaches. 4 years ago, Mark was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, a chronic disease that affects the central nervous system. Her voice choking with emotion, Mark told the committee that her oldest son has Tourette's syndrome and a handful of other neurological problems. Her youngest son has some of the same disorders. Mark says she was convinced that the pre-deployment vaccine she received and chemical and other environmental exposures she underwent while serving in Iraq caused her health problems and those of her children. Her husband also served in the Gulf War, but in a different area. He has not reported problems yet with his health. Now, we know persons who deployed with us in theater who have not been healthy since their deployment, and we know there are many who have deteriorated slowly over the years and who are now in crisis. Of the 700,000 or so U.S. troops who served in the Persian Gulf War, 175,000 to 200 are seriously sick, Benn said. Others who testified said in addition to the pre-deployment vaccines, the problems that Gulf War veterans experienced might have been caused by exposure to the depleted uranium used in munitions and armor. Low-level nerve agents such as sarin that were released when large weapons depot was destroyed and smoke from more than 600 burning oil wells in Kuwait. The VA has conducted more than 330 projects associated with the health problems of Gulf War veterans. The agency will launch a study next year of possible links between the veterans and brain cancer and multiple sclerosis, said Joel Cuppersmith, the VA's chief research and development officer. He's a good man, Joel Cuppersmith. I know him.
Hold on, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Arthur Wernquist. Well, certainly Arthur is reading to us from an article out of the Amaklatsi News Services talking about the hearings and the various people who have been testifying about how many of the veterans of the first Gulf War are ill today. So go right ahead with this story, Arthur.
Well, the VA's commitment to funding clinical trials to identify new therapies for ill Gulf War veterans continues to this day. Kilpatrick said effective therapy for the veterans' health problems was available, including treatment for those with chronic unexplained symptoms, and they're going to keep finding more and more things as these studies go on. Now, we've got a mystery that happened here. You may recall in August, MINOT, mystery surrounds the death of the MINOT airmen. and six members of the United States Air Force who were involved in the Minot Air Force base incident have died mysteriously. An incident happened when a B-52 bomber was mistakenly loaded with six nuclear warheads and flown for more than 3 hours across several states, prompting an Air Force investigation and the firing of one commander. And the plane was carrying advanced cruise missiles from Minot Air Force Base, North Dakota, to Barksdale Air Force Base on August 30th. The Air Combat Command has ordered a command-wide stand-down on September 14th to review the procedures, officials said. The missiles, which are being decommissioned, were mounted onto pylons on the bomber's wings, and it's unclear why the warheads had not been removed beforehand.
Now, these were nuclear warheads on, yeah, on these missiles. These were cruise missiles on a B-52, and they were flown. Why would they have been flown? Why would you? You can't get a nuclear missile out. There are all sorts of safeguards to keep those things from suddenly being accidentally deployed.
Yeah.
And yet here were six of them, and that's what is so amazing is that there were six or seven people involved, and all how many of those have subsequently died?
They're all dead.
They're all dead.
In addition to this,
within a few weeks.
That's right. In addition to the munitions squadron commander, who was relieved of his duties, crews involved in the incident, including ground crews, workers have been temporarily decertified for handling munitions. An activist group, Citizens for Legitimate Government, said the six members of the U.S. Air Force who were directly involved as loaders or as pilots were killed within 7 days in, shall we say, accidents. The victims include Airman First Class Todd Blue, 20 years old, who died while on leave in Virginia. A statement by the military confirmed his death but didn't say how he died. In another incident, a married couple from Barksdale Air Force Base were killed in the 5100 block of Shreveport Blanchard Highway in Louisiana. The two were riding a 2007 Harley-Davidson motorcycle with the husband driving and the wife passenger, police said. They're both dead now. They were traveling behind northbound Pontiac Aztec driven by Erica Jerry, 35, of Shreveport, the county sheriff said. Jerry initiated a left turn into a business parking lot at the same time the man driving the motorcycle attempted to pass her van on the left in a no-passing zone. They collided. Another one, Adam Bars, a 20-year-old airman from Minot Air Force Base, was killed in a crash on the outskirts of the city. First Lieutenant Weston Cassell, 28, a Minot Air Force Base bomber pilot, was killed in a motorcycle crash in Tennessee. These are in various parts of the country, the military officials say. And police found the body of a missing Air Force Captain John Fruk near Badger Peak in northeast Shamania County, Washington. And this activist group says the mysterious deaths of the Air Force members could indicate to a conspiracy to cover up the truth about what really happened with the Minot Air Force Base incident.
Well, do you have that article? I would love to see that article.
I'll make a copy of this and I'll send it out to you.
I've heard references to that, but certainly when I heard of it, there were only three of them were dead. All seven of them are dead.
No, they're gone.
Oh, they're not?
Yeah, they're all gone now.
They're all gone. And ladies and gentlemen, this sounds just like what would happen over in Putin's Russia. People said it couldn't happen. What do you think the chances are that seven of the people who were involved with shipping those nuclear-tipped cruise missiles just all happened to be dead? Please get that article to me. I'll make it available to any of our listeners. What a question. What a wonder if this could really be true. Could things like that happen in America? Yes, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, you bet.
There were actually seven enlisted men who wrote an op-ed article critical of our position over in Iraq. And certainly within a few weeks, at least three of them were dead. And, of course, we know what happened to Pat Tillman. Three bullets, wounds right in the center of his forehead.
Yeah.
And they've never asked who shot him. And the men in his unit were told, if you ever talk to anybody about this, you'll be in real trouble. And, of course, they say, well, they demoted a general or something, a high level, but the question is not who ordered the murder of Pat Tillman. And if you doubt he was murdered, you have to know that the military officers who inspected the body said, this is a murder, we want to open an investigation. And they were blocked from doing it from people very highly placed. If you want the documentation, we've got it.
There's been so much happening over the last few weeks.
this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is Arthur Bernclough. Arthur, please go right ahead with the story.
Okay. We've had so much happening over the last few weeks. Again, the Senate approved $150 billion in war funding. And this is by the Associated Press and Flaherty. Senate approves $150 in war funding.
$150 billion, right?
Yeah, $150 billion.
Right.
Thwarted in efforts to bring troops home from Iraq, Senate Democrats helped pass a defense policy bill authorizing another $150 billion for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Monday's 92-3 vote comes as the House planned to approve separate legislation Tuesday that requires President Bush to give Congress a plan for eventual troop withdrawals. The developments underscored the difficulty facing Democrats in the Iraq debate. They lacked the votes to pass legislation ordering troops home and are divided on whether to cut money for combat despite a mandate by supporters to end the war. Hoping the political landscape changes in coming months, Democratic leaders say they will renew their fight when Congress considers the money Bush wants in war funding. While the Senate policy bill authorizes the money to be spent, it doesn't guarantee it. Bush will have to wait until Congress passes a separate appropriation bill before the war funds are transferred to military coffers. I think that's where you're going to see the next dogfight, said Senator Majority Leader Harry Reid of Nevada, of the upcoming war spending bill. Democrats say their options include directing that the money be spent on bringing troops home instead of combat, setting a date when money for the war is cut off, and identifying a goal to end the war and try to pressure Bush to bring troops home. Similar attempts have been made but fell short of the 60 votes needed to overcome the procedural hurdles of the Senate. Many of us have reached a breaking point on this, said Senate Majority Whip Dick Durbin of Illinois. I've done this for too many years. I've waited for the president to start bringing this war to an end, and I'm not going to sign up for this any longer. In the House, Democrats are pushing for a bill that would require the administration to report to Congress in 60 days and every 90 days thereafter on the status of its redeployment plans in Iraq. The bill, sponsored by Democrats John Tanner of Tennessee and Neil Abercrombie of Hawaii, was initially cast aside as too mild by Democratic leaders, focused on tougher proposals ordering troops home this fall. But after Democrats were unable to peel off Republican support, the Iraq debate stalled and some four dozen rank-and-file Democrats demanded a vote on the Abercrombie-Tanner bill.
Hold that thought right there, Arthur. We'll be right back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest this evening is Arthur Bernclough of Veterans for Constitutional Law. And Arthur, before we go on, I want you to get out your webpage. I want you to get out your telephone number. There are veterans, many veterans listening tonight who really, of course, are trapped in the system. They don't know what to do. And what you want to do if you're not getting a fair break or dealt fairly with by the Veterans Administration is get in touch with Arthur and the Veterans for Constitutional Law. Now, we have no relationship, but we just believe that what Arthur is doing is very, very important. And so, you know, if you've got a problem, it doesn't cost you anything to get in touch with him. And they will help you, and they'll point you in the right direction. And we've had so many veterans who've been helped by Arthur and the people that are working with him. They're people who are not beholden to the government, like the veterans of foreign wars and the American Legion and the Disabled American Veterans. Almost all of these organizations are simply been infiltrated by government agents, and they're there not to aid the veterans. They're there to do everything they can to keep them from rocking the boat. They're just to sit there and do nothing as the years tick by and they don't get disability payments. Well, Arthur's group are there to rock the boat and to shake the tree and get the apples out and help
that's
the veterans.
Just
go
what
ahead.
We're doing.
Go right ahead.
Now, this is going to be the first time since the war in Iraq began that we're working together as a Congress. That's what they said here, instead of one party or another.
No, I want you to get your telephone number out and your webpage.
Okay, I'm Arthur Bernclough, Veterans for Constitutional Law Limited. Our telephone number to reach us is 631 area code 474-4261. My email, if anyone wants to send me an email, it's It's Bernklau. That's Bernklau at OPT. That's Opt. OPT online. .net. I'll repeat that. Bernklau. That's Bernklau at OPT online. .net. And we do need your help. We do need your support. And we want to make people more aware of what is happening with the government. And the government doesn't like us to make people aware of this, but we have committed ourselves to doing this. And we're not going to change. We're going to try to change what's going on with our government. And we're going to try to do what's the best for our veterans and for our country.
All right, fine. Let's get your telephone number out again.
Best way to reach me is, telephone number is 631-474-4261. If you want to write me, we get tons of letters in every day, and believe me, I read every single one of them. And it's Veterans for Constitutional Law Limited, and we're located at number 112, that's 112 Jefferson Avenue, 112 Jefferson Avenue in Port Jefferson, New York. Port Jefferson, New York, 11777, 11777, and we do need your financial support, too, because all of this costs money, and we're out there on the front lines, and we're doing these things that have to be done, and nobody from our organization gets paid any more than $1 a year. We're all volunteers, and most of us are disabled veterans.
All right, Father, one more time, get that telephone number out.
631 area. 474-4261, and believe me, every call will be returned. Every call will be returned that you make here. Every letter will be answered.
All right, fine. You go right ahead and then pick up the story then. Of course, you're out there on the front lines. You were reading, of course, from the McClatchy newspaper.
McClatchy News.
Go ahead.
They have been really supportive of the veterans of this country. Now, in February, Bush requested more than $140 billion for the war, and he's expected to ask for another $42 billion to cover costs in the 2008 budget year, which began on Monday. The Senate's defense policy bill authorizes Bush's initial request, plus an additional $23 billion for the purchase of bomb-resistant vehicles. It's about time. In addition to war money, the Senate's defense policy bill authorizes more than $500 billion in annual military programs, including such big-ticket items as $10.1 billion for missile defense. Republicans predict the bill is on track to be vetoed by President Bush because it includes, they attach one thing to another. That's how our Congress works. It includes hate crimes legislation by Senator Edward Kennedy, Democrat of Massachusetts. The White House has said Kennedy's proposal, which would let federal law enforcement help states prosecute attacks on gays, is unnecessary. The House passed its version of the Defense Authorization Bill in May by a 397-27 vote, and that $646 billion measure would trim hundreds of millions of dollars from some weapons modernization programs and use the money instead to aid troops in combat. The House bill has drawn a veto threat from the White House because of provisions insisting the military rely heavily on American-made products and proposed changes to the Pentagon's personnel policies. And here's something that we had discussed at one time before, and here's a letter that has come into me, and it's this is from the Anchorage Daily News in Alaska. This is betrayal. Personality disorder discharges save money. By the way, these personality discharges are going to be reversed by this lawsuit that was instituted in San Francisco by the veterans, by Morrison and Foster. And this was published October 2nd. And it says here, you have honorably served in the Army for 7 years. You've won commendations. Reenlisted after your first hitch. You're in Ramadi, Iraq in 2004 when a rocket hits the building you're in and leaves you unconscious in rubble. Eventually, doctors pull shrapnel from your neck and ear canals. You lose 75% of your hearing. suffered depression and nightmares. You try to kill yourself by dropping a hairdryer in your bathwater. The dryer short circuits. You seek medical help at your Army post. Eventually, the Army discharges you because you had a pre-existing personality disorder before you joined the service. And what does that mean? It means you can't get disability pay. That requires a medical board evaluation, and a soldier who signs a personality disorder discharge gets no medical board evaluation. You can't get medical care. You can't be treated for post-traumatic stress syndrome because the VA treats only those wounds and conditions suffered in service. Pre-existing condition is the Pentagon's way of saying the Ramadi rocket had nothing to do with the soldier's trouble. Now, you must pay back part of your reenlistment bonus for the time you won't serve because of the personality disorder discharge. And all of this happened to former specialist John Town of Findlay, Ohio, this spring and summer. The spring and summer, with reports in The Nation and ABC News, Mr. Town has become a symbol for veterans groups because he's not alone. The military has mustered out about 22,500 service people in the last 6 years with personality disorder discharges, and it appears that most of them were flat out bogus, as in the case of Mr. Town, or at least contestable. There's a gut reaction word for what happened to Mr. Town, but we can't use it in the family newspaper. This is out of Anchorage, Alaska. Why are the services doing this? Money. The Department of Defense and Veterans Affairs save money if they don't have to pay benefits. God Almighty, let us take a deep breath. A bipartisan group of senators led by Barack Obama of Illinois and Christopher Bond of Missouri has introduced a provision in the defense bill to stop the personality disorder discharges pending investigation. Sure, they've come out with something now to stop this. That's because there's a lawsuit going on that has they have addressed this directly. To stop the personality disorder discharges pending investigations by the General Accountability Office. The GAO is already looking into the practice at Fort Carson, Colorado, and if somebody recalls the program that I did on this before, we specifically talked about Fort Carson, Colorado, and imposed tougher standards and limits on such discharges. So we say now, good for the senators. It's about time that they got into this. Now, where is the commander-in-chief? A few words from the White House lawn, strong words, Mr. President Leader's words, would go far to end this kind of nonsense. Some personality disorder discharges are no doubt valid, and those no longer able to function in a theater of war shouldn't be there. But any soldier who has served in Iraq or Afghanistan should get the benefit of the doubt. Soldiers subject to personality disorder discharges must be fully informed of their rights and all the consequences of such a discharge before signing these papers. You don't have to be a psychiatrist or a soldier to understand that rockets, IEDs, and sniper rounds are not pre-existing conditions. One god-awful argument to justify personality disorder discharges was that dormant pre-existing conditions surface under the stress of combat. Hence, soldiers don't qualify for treatment of PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. In response, we refer to that word we can't print in a family newspaper. The United States has a solemn obligation to those among us who are asked to wage war in Iraq and Afghanistan. Let's keep that promise. Let's keep that obligation. The bottom line is, take care of our wounded troops and don't look for ways to deny care.
And I think if they have personality disorders, they shouldn't be being sent over there because they would act irresponsibly. And if they did send them over there, then it is the military's responsibility, not the soldier's responsibility. And these are all gimmicks to prevent having to pay benefits to those disabled veterans. Many of them are seriously injured as a direct result of their military care, and this pre-existing psychiatric disorder, personality disorder, is simply a gimmick to save money. That's what's so really untenable.
Well, the man who's pushing this in the House, we talked about the Senate before, but the man who's pushing this in the House is Representative Philip Hare of Illinois. And he's leading the effort to get similar legislation approved. And what he said is, it defies logic to think that tens of thousands of our servicemen and women slipped through the cracks during the pre-screening process, Hare said. We have a moral obligation to review the discharge process and ensure that we are getting it right. And I'm saying to our Department of Defense and the military and the VA, get it right. Enough nonsense is enough nonsense. We've had too much already.
Well, I'm glad you're there to help these people. And, of course, certainly there was a recent article in the Reader's Digest. What was that all about?
The recent article was written by a fellow by the name of Michael, he was with the New Republic, and everyone knows that the New Republic is the mouthpiece of our administration. And they wrote an article that over 300,000 veterans are getting paid disabilities for things like alcoholism, smoking addiction, and gonorrhea. And
it really sounds ridiculous.
It is.
Why would anybody be getting paid for gonorrhea or for smoking addiction? And obviously, they're not telling the truth. What they're trying to do.
Oh, no, they came up with a bunch of phony statistics with the cooperation of the Government Accountability Office. I'm surprised with them. They came up with a bunch of phony statistics. And this New Republic magazine, with the cooperation of Reader's Digest, which has never really been a veteran-friendly magazine, have come up with a real scurrilous attitude. It's in the September Reader's Digest, and we sent out newsletters to our members urging them to boycott the Reader's Digest on this, because the Reader's Digest is... to print something like this is ridiculous. Now, I come across hundreds of cases every single week. I read hundreds of cases, and I have yet to see somebody getting a disability for VD, gonorrhea, smoking addiction, and alcoholism. I've yet to see it. And they're claiming there's 300,000 people getting paid for this.
They're simply lying in an effort to suggest we've just got to clamp down on all these people ripping off the Veterans Administration. I'm certain that there may be a few people who are trying to do it, but there's so many veterans who are being ripped off. You know, they're not ripping off the government. They're being ripped off by government agents who have been actually given bonuses for depriving veterans of the benefits that are due to them under the law. That is what's unconscionable. And when the Reader's Digest comes out with something like that to prejudice people against the veterans, why, shame on the Reader's Digest.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm calling for a boycott of this magazine. And my wife says, oh, I get it every month. I said, do you read the articles? She says, I read the one you're talking about, and it's ridiculous. Now, I've been with Veterans for Constitutional Law since 1986, and each week I go over hundreds and hundreds of cases, and I have yet to see any cases like the ones they're talking about. Now, something else is happening here. Let me give you a little history. They're trying to pass something here called a Veterans Disarmament Bill. Have you heard about this,
yes,
Doctor?
Yes, I think that really is. If you are a veteran, and of course you've ever had seen a psychiatrist or something, and you're never going to be able to own a gun again. What sort of madness is that?
Well, it originally came out with Bill Clinton. He was the first to do this, and he did us irreparable damage. They supplied 80-some-odd thousand veterans' names. They supplied them to the NICS for a background check, National Instant Criminal Background Check, drafting the regulations on here. And these names were supplied, and now they're trying to pass this. And can I give you a little bit of gun history here?
What they're basically trying to do is say, if you've been a veteran, you've ever had any psychiatric problem, you can never have a gun again. So, ladies
exactly.
and gentlemen, this is a good reason not to go in the military, because, of course, if you've been in the military and there's been any problem there, why you'll never, when you get out of the military, be able to have a gun to defend yourself and your family. It's a violation of the Second Amendment, but even more than that, it's a direct attack on the veterans, and it's a direct attack on the right of the people of America to be armed. Go right ahead, Herman.
Well, I'm telling people, if you've got a weapon and you have a permit, even if you've got a permit, if the government passes something like this, I'm telling them, stash your weapons. Hide them. Don't turn them in. If they want mine, they'll get it business end first. Now, I'm going to give you a little gun history for your information. You might be interested in hearing about this. In 1929, the Soviet Union established gun control from 1929 to 1953, and about 20 million dissidents, unable to defend themselves, were rounded up and exterminated in Russia. In 1911...
Hold that thought. We're going to be right back here in just a moment. Go right ahead, Arthur. We got about 3 minutes left.
Oh, boy. Okay, I'll try and rush it through. In 1911, Turkey established gun control from 1915 to 1917. 1.5 million Armenians, unable to defend themselves, were rounded up and exterminated. Germany established gun control in 1938, and from 1939 to 1945, a total of 13 million Jews and others who were unable to defend themselves were rounded up and exterminated. China established gun control in 1935. From 1948 to 1952, 20 million political dissidents were unable to defend themselves and were rounded up and exterminated. Guatemala established gun control in 1964. From 1964 to 1981, 100,000 Mayan Indians, unable to defend themselves, were rounded up and exterminated. Uganda established gun control in 1970 to 1971. From 1971 to 1979, 300,000 Christians, unable to defend themselves, were rounded up and exterminated. And I can go on and on with countries.
Don't forget Rwanda, of course. They had gun control there, too.
Yes, they did.
800,000 Tutsis were hacked to death with machetes. They didn't have machete control.
And Cambodia is another place.
Right. And people have to understand that the people who want gun control here are not concerned about the children, and they're not concerned about crazy veterans. They are moving us towards gun control because they want a dictatorship, and they hate the Constitution, which, according to the Second Amendment, says that the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be abridged. And these people who want to take away our gun rights are part of this whole movement that really wants to establish a dictatorship here. You have 1 minute to wrap up the program, Arthur.
Well, the Constitution is going to be our salvation. And the more we can stay toward its original, the original interpretation of the Constitution, the better off America and Americans are going to be.
Amen to that. And certainly our guest has been Arthur Burnclough of Veterans for Constitutional Law. And we always enjoy having Arthur here. And incidentally, Arthur will be out for our October 28th meeting, and you'll have a chance to meet him if you do come. So, of course, we hope that many of you out there in the listening audience will be attending our October 28th meeting here on the North Shore of the Monterey Bay. Arthur, thank you for everything you do.
Oh, I'm looking forward to your meeting. You've got some wonderful guests coming up there.
Well, we're really pleased with the lineup that we have, and we're looking forward to seeing you and your wife again.
And God bless you for the work that you're doing, Dr. Stan.
God bless you, too. Arthur, good night. Thank you so much.
Good night now.
Bye-bye. And, of course, our guest has been Arthur Burnclough, and really a man who's dedicated. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Arthur Burnclough, who's really dedicated to helping veterans. And, you know, if you need help, go to him. I think he'll take good care of you. Incidentally, Arthur will be attending our all-day seminar we're going to be having here on the 28th of October. He's coming out from the East Coast along with his wife, and we do hope, of course, that you'll have a chance to come and meet him and meet the other excellent speakers we're going to have. Dr. Garth Nicholson will be there, Ron Brown, Carol Matriciana, Michael Shaw. Be a great lineup of speakers here, and you'll learn a great deal. So if you could possibly make it, October the 28th, an all-day seminar on the North Shore of the Monterey Bay, and we're going to be serving lunch. The program will start early in the morning, and And, of course, it'll go till about 5:30 in the evening. We do hope that you will be here. If you possibly can, come and bring your friends. It's always a good lunch. It's always a good time. And, of course, we always enjoy having an opportunity to see you. Now, certainly, we talking about the veterans' problems, we carry a four-tape set called Vaccine A. It's about an experimental vaccine that was given to our troops that had squalene in it, and of course, it crippled probably at least 100,000 of our troops. It was an experimental vaccine. They use our troops as guinea pigs. And then, of course, we carry the book, the Rockefeller Report, put out by the Veterans Administration in 1994, going into the Gulf War illness and how they've experimented on our troops for years. Hundreds of thousands of Americans have been experimented on without their knowledge. According to this government report, I talked to the woman who prepared the report for the Veterans Administration, asked her to come on the program. She was afraid to. She was afraid of reprisals for what she had written. We actually carry the book. It's called Project Daylily. It goes into the background of the Gulf War illness and, of course, how there is a mycoplasm, a genetically modified mycoplasm, where, of course, the actual patent for that is held by the Armed Forces Institute of Pathology. Why would the people who have Gulf War illness, who have the genetically modified mycoplasm, and why would the Veterans Administration, or I should say the Armed Forces Institute of Pathology, hold a patent on that? We actually have certainly a four-tape set on anthrax vaccine that has made so many of our servicemen ill. A four-tape set on the Gulf War illness. We have a great deal of information you need to get to understand that the terrible things they have done to our veterans. You need to hear my talk on Nundare College Genocide. It's about the population control agenda. It's an excellent DVD. And then if you really want a much more advanced, information, we have a DVD entitled Planned Population Reduction. It's about 2.5 hours. It was given for the Prophecy Club. There is a program to actually destroy the health and kill off large numbers of our people. And people say nobody would do that. Well, no rational person would do that, but we're not dealing with rational people. You need to get our DVD, actually it's a video, on population control. You need to get our talk. It's a four-tape set on population control, a video on population control, a DVD on planned population reduction, a DVD on Nundare College genocide. This and so much more information is available. You can go to our website at RadioLiberty.com and pull down our monograph there on planned population reduction. There really is a plan to kill off the majority of the world's population. You say there couldn't be. And I would like to suggest it not only could be, it is. If you doubt it, go to Elberton, Georgia. Look at the great monument there, the American Stonehenge and the Georgia Guidestones. And there they call for the destruction of over 90% of our population. And they talk about maintaining the world population at 500 million in constant balance with nature. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. There really is evil and wicked people out there who hate humanity. Pray for America, but please pray for Radio Liberty.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network.